and maybe months.
Great. So yeah, Tim and I were talking yesterday, and I also had my call with my weekly call with Valerie. And I read a really nice article in the New York Times. It was either yesterday or the day before, about writers sort of giving people some advice about how to handle working from home. And one of the ideas I thought was terrific, and I think it's going to be really great for us in the Guild. And so here's the general idea. So people who work from home who are writers like to do chat rooms, but they don't talk. So essentially what they do is they'll go into like a Zoom room like we have right now, and they'll mute their speakers, and then they'll write for about 2 hours. And every time they get a little bit bored, they can look up and see other people typing away. And it's a really nice way of understanding that we're all together in this stuff. So what we're going to do for the Guild is every day we're going to have a writing sprint. So you can chime in. I think we're going to do it sometime around 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time. And then at the beginning of the week on Monday, for fun, I'm going to give everybody a scene assignment. So on Monday at about 11 a.m., I'll come on for about 5 or 10 minutes, and I will explain what that week's scene assignment will be. So it'll be very much in the tradition of Ground Your Craft, but it'll be a little bit looser and more fun. So for example, I'm just pulling this off the top of my head. I might say something like, this week we're going to focus on a two-person scene, two friends having coffee, and one of the friends is going to have to tell the other friend that they're having an affair with their spouse, something like that. So that way, everybody, and then I can give you a series of prompts. You know, your inciting incident is going to be this. Here are a couple of suggestions for some progressive complications. Here's your crisis, your climax, and your resolution. Keep it under, 2,000 or 3,000 words. And then during the week, for all those who are sort of trying to work on their scenes, they can work on this specific scene, upload them into the forum, and other people can share them or not. And you can certainly discuss ideas and things in the forum during the week. And then on Friday, what I'll do is I'll do an hour Q&A. So each Friday for the foreseeable future, I will be available at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to answer any questions about anything. It can be about, that week's scene, about editing, publishing, anything you want to talk about. So every week, I'll do a full hour from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And so what I want to do is just really give all of you more access to whatever's in my brain. For better or for worse. So that's what we're going to do. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll take it from there and see how it goes.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, we're really excited about this. I yesterday morning I was journaling, and I'm not much of a homebody. I'd love to be out and about. And so right now, the kids are home at least 3 weeks in where I'm at. And so this idea of being home for three straight weeks was just kind of getting to me. And then I started thinking like, okay, well, what could be the silver lining here? And one is that all this stuff I always complain I don't have time to do. I can't really say that anymore. And so I should be able to get more things going. And then also, like, this is something where a community like the Guild can really shine, because it's maybe one of our few contacts with our world when we can't be out in the world. So we're really excited to do this, and we'll get that started, and we're going to communicate with you more about how that's going to work. But let's go ahead and jump in to what we're really talking about this month, which are the two books that you got as part of your Guild membership. So the first is What's the Big Idea? A Nonfiction Condensed. And then the second is our first Masterworks Analysis Guide as part of Story Grid Publishing, which is on the Tipping Point. And both of these books are by Leslie Watts and Shelley Speary. And so I just want to tell you a little bit about them, give you their back, just a short bio on them, and then let them tell you a little bit about what it's meant for them to work on these books and what they've learned along the process. And then we'll jump into some questions. Leslie Watts is a Story Grid certified editor, writer, and podcaster based in Austin, Texas. She's been writing for as long as she can remember, from her sixth grade magazine about cats to writing practice while drafting opinions for an appellate court judge. As an editor, Leslie helps fiction and nonfiction clients write epic stories that matter. She believes writers become better storytellers through study and practice, and that editors owe a duty of care to help writers with specific and supportive guidance. You can find her online at writership.com. And Shelley Speary is also a StoryGrid certified editor, writer, and researcher based in Alexandria, Virginia. She used to work at National Geographic, so she thinks every book is better if it has a cool map, a dramatic landscape, or a lot of penguins. As a writer and researcher, Shelley works with nonprofit and business clients on environmental, labor, and education topics. As an editor, she specializes in nonfiction, helping authors tell true stories about the world. She agrees with Barbara Kingsolver that revision is where fine art begins. You can find her online at SperryEditorial.com. So Leslie and Shelley, welcome. And let's go ahead and kick it over to you. And I'd love to hear just what it was like writing both The Beat and also deep diving into The Tipping Point, and then what you've learned through that process.
How do we start, Leslie? I think you're muted.
Oh, there we go.
Right.
I'll get it figured out.
I think right at moments, it was a torturous process, and at moments, it was fantastic, right? We ended up really, in the end, we really ended up enjoying it, and particularly enjoying the collaboration, which is something I didn't expect. I've never collaborated on a big, big project like this, and it ended up being fantastic. Two big projects, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. The collaboration, I couldn't have done it on my own. I suspect you could have.
No.
But I couldn't.
No way.
So it's really, that was that process. And what we found, I think, in working together is that we had, right, we each have things that we're really good at.
It complemented each other, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was lucky.
Yeah, and it reminds me about how many skills are required to take a book from the first idea to, here we go, it's, you know, it's on the shelf.
It's real.
Have it. That it isn't a solitary process, which is so wonderful that we have the guild, because we can find other people. I found you because Sean did the, you know, the certified editor
the training. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah.
Leslie, if I could just chime in for a sec. So, let me just give a quick background here, because what happened was I had written the Tipping Point posts on the Story Grid years ago. I think it was 2016. And independently, Leslie and Shelley emailed me and said, are you ever going to do anything with that? Or is it just going to sit there and die a slow death? And I had said at the time that I had always planned to do something akin to the Story Grid for nonfiction. And then I dumped it on both of them and said, look, I don't have the time to figure this out. Why don't you two collaborate? Here's generally the idea that I have. We want to do a small little book that will just give a complete, you know, lay down of our Story Grid nonfiction idea, what the four categories are and where the big idea fits in there. And then, we wanted to do the masterwork guide to the Tipping Point, which was a much, much larger project. And what they discovered is that a lot of the material that I had provided them wasn't correct. So they
wouldn't
they,
say that.
I disagree.
We're not going to say that. No.
Well, they were charged with making it actually readable. So they did an amazing job, and I'm just so proud of both of them because I also had the opportunity of being able to review their work and to help edit after they had done their draft. And even in that process, we had some major sort of leaps in cognitive understanding of nonfiction that made it even better. So like three people working together at the very end was even more amazing. So the experience for me as sort of the driving force behind it was, wow, it's even better than I could have imagined, collaborating with people that you trust, who you know are in it for the right reasons. Nobody was ever clamoring for, you know, just title credit or anything like that. And I think that's really the amazing thing we have here at the Guild, as Leslie and Shelley were just saying, is that we have the opportunity to find fellow colleagues on our journey, and we can work together with them on projects that will help us individually and collectively. So as the first, you know, I hadn't even scheduled this project for another year. And then I realized, geez, I'm gonna do this big idea nonfiction seminar. Wouldn't it be great to have those books ready for the attendees? And then I was like, hey, Leslie and Shelley, can you get this done in like 60 days? And they took up the challenge. They really did. And they, and it's such a better book than I would have written by myself. So I'm just going to chime out there. But I think everybody really needs to know that opportunities come to writers and editors all the time. And it's just sort of like grabbing one and saying, you know what? I've never worked with anybody before. Leslie seems like a nice person. Let me try it and see what happens. And good things happen when you take those opportunities. So that's what the Guild's about, is about sort of throwing some opportunities out there to all of you and then let you run with the ball.
Yeah, so, I would say for sure that's what happened. And we had lots of moments. It really mirrors the writing of every book, and particularly the writing of every nonfiction book, I think, because I think Leslie would agree. We had many ups and downs while we were writing, and moments when we said, no, this is never going to work. We can't figure it out. But we kept pushing, and it helped so much that we had each other, because if, you know, when I was at this point, maybe Leslie was up here and we traded off, and then we helped each other get through, you know, and, you know, just the process, the writing process. And then, you know, it's so true. Sean comes in at the end, and then we did have a lot of transformations toward the end of each book that made them kind of go from here up to here, I think, which is just thrilling to like be part of that and see it actually happen and then see it come out in print. So,
well, I'd like to hear from each of you too. Like, what's one thing you learned that was kind of surprising? It could be about the writing process. It could also just be about nonfiction writing in general. What's one thing that each of you learned during the process of writing these books? We'll start with you, Shelley.
Okay. So I was thinking about this morning. Actually, Leslie and I now keep collaborating because we keep like bringing things up to each other in Slack. So like back and forth. So this morning I was just thinking about, you know, our process and big idea books in general. And I think one thing that comes back to me, two things. One thing is it's very much what we saw with Gladwell. You know, he got to the end of Tipping Point and then decided a few years later, some of what I said wasn't really right. I'm going to change the way I think about this or that. That you get to the end of a project and it's not about, I have the perfect thing. I have the answer. Here's my answer. It's never. Like, that's the thing I want to kind of convince everyone in the world of. you never get to the end and you have the perfect answer ever. Even though when we talk about nonfiction, when we talk about big idea books, what we always think of is, oh, a genius is going to give us the answer. No, the genius to me, then the second thing is, the genius of a big idea book is the author gives you the right questions. And then you take the questions and you keep asking them and keep asking them. And then maybe you disagree with the author in the end. That's okay. It's like, oh, he or she gave me these fantastic questions that I'm now going to take out into the world and keep asking. So I think that was like a big thing for me to rejigger my understanding of what big idea books actually are. That's my
awesome. Okay, Leslie.
Wow, she took my answer.
Because we agree on everything, right?
We, yeah. So I guess for me, the other thing is how much fiction and nonfiction intersect and are really about, like when Sean shared the big insight that stories are really about the transfer of knowledge, and that it's like right that you can start seeing the nonfiction in fiction and the fiction in the nonfiction, and how important the story is for making the information available. So if even if someone wants to write, someone say isn't interested in a big idea nonfiction book necessarily, but they want a how-to, they can still add stories to it. They can still have a through line. They can still use all the StoryGrid tools to write that book. It's just, you know, there are a few things that you do differently, but it's all story. It's all about how do we recognize that we're all connected so that we can, you know, do this.
We can do it. Live.
Well, right. You know, one question that we've gotten around this, because, you know, we've just started StoryGrid Publishing. This is our first Masterworks guide, second if you count the Pride and Prejudice. But some people are like, well, you know, I'm not Malcolm Gladwell. I'm not a researcher. You know, I'm not diving into the science behind things. How do I kind of look at a Malcolm Gladwell book like The Tipping Point and apply it to my big idea nonfiction that is kind of a different take on it? Like, can I still learn something by looking at the way Malcolm Gladwell does things, or is this only for like science journalist type people?
Well, if you guys don't mind, let me take a stab at this one, because I think if you go back, especially for guild members, and you listen to the podcast that Tim and I did when he was writing Running Down a Dream, at the very beginning, Tim was saying, I just want to do a how-to book that lays out my 25 sort of hacks to be able to create a business that will work for someone. And I kept pressing him and pressing him and pressing him, because I didn't think anybody would care about that book, because that book has been written so many different times that what we ended up doing was combining a memoir with a big idea book. And the big idea behind Tim's Running Down a Dream is that none of us is broken. All of us have potential within us that can create a beautiful thing. And that is sort of like the big, big idea behind big ideas, is that all of us can go on our own exploratory journeys and, armed with our own curiosity, find things that are so extraordinarily valuable, not only to us, but to our community, that even if you are not Malcolm Gladwell, those sort of really intense, curious, exploratory missions are the things that can guide you when you get stuck. So one of the really important things to remember when you're writing is that it's the most important thing to you right now, but it's also not that important, right? So you got to have a little humility when you're working and say, you know what? The world's not going to end that I haven't, you know, finished this chapter because I'm stumped. Why don't I do something else for a while? And why don't I explore some other ideas? And this is why it's nice to have a writing partner, because the two of you can help each other. And when you're both getting freaked out, you can both go, oh my gosh, this is stupid. Why don't we just chill out for a minute and see if we can come up with the best answer that we can right now. So those sort of projects that you take on with humility, as you're writing them, a magical thing happens. Your voice starts to shine through. Your individual personality starts to come through in the writing. So when you're writing about trying to find the answer to a problem and you're just, you know, giving the X, Y, and Z of how you went about it, that narrative is extraordinarily compelling to a third party, because we all go on these exploratory missions. Like if you want to learn how to plant a garden, it, you know, I'm not a very good gardener, and I've tried it a million times, but I've read a million of these books, and I keep buying them and reading them because I want to hear how people like me went on the same journey. So taking yourself less seriously is rule number one for the creative process. And rule number two is to just go by these formal guidelines, you know, using the book that Shelley and Leslie wrote, just that 104-page book as your map is going to be so helpful, because it will always guide you back on what's the most important thing. So, you know, don't freak out if you're not Malcolm Gladwell. Malcolm Gladwell even doesn't think he's Malcolm Gladwell.
So here's a question from Larry. Would you say that books like Sapiens by Yuval, I forgot the last name, or The Hero with the Thousand Faces by Joseph Campbell fit the story grid big idea paradigm?
Yeah, I would. Without question. I mean, the big idea of Hero with a Thousand Faces is there's monomyth, right, across cultures. So I don't necessarily agree with all the things in Joseph Campbell's book, but that's, as Shelley said, that's part of the big idea book. It's having the courage to lay out your worldview, laying out your vision for a particular big idea. And that takes so much guts and courage that it allows people to build on it, right? So if nobody puts out The Hero with a Thousand Faces, then nobody's really looking at monomyth in the way that they do today. This is a core feature of StoryGrid, right? I'm looking at monomyth and saying, is that really true? Well, but, and I don't want to get into that now, but that's sort of the StoryGrid lab. It's what I'm working on now in the lab, is what's the StoryGrid approach to the monomyth? As far as Sapiens goes, that's a big idea book, which is all about the global historical shifts in our cognitive facilities. So his idea is, you know, there are these major cognitive shifts and that we're right on the precipice of a new transformational cognitive shift in our species. And the reason why it became such a massive bestseller, it's a kind of a wonky book, is because I think we all intuitively have that feeling that we're on the verge of a cognitive leap that's extraordinarily exciting and also, you know, gives us a little fright and fear. And that's good. That's the way the world is. So that was the big idea about Sapiens, is that, hey, Sapiens, as a species, Homo sapiens, goes through cognitive shifts, and we're on the verge of a new one, and that's why he wrote the second book, which is Homo Deus, I think.
Awesome. So here's a question from Greg. This one's for Leslie and Shelley. What is the collaboration process like for writers? How do you divide up the work and write together? I was wondering that too. So would love to hear how you guys divided up the work, decided what to write. Did you like assign certain chapters? Did you like edit each other? How did all that work?
We did like a grab bag of things, because we started with the Gladwell book. And at that, in that one, tell me if I'm wrong, Hudsley, we did divide it up. We halved it basically and said, well, I'm going to start writing this half and you start writing that half, you know, in terms of analyzing the scenes. Mm-hmm. But by the time we got to writing, What's the Big Idea, we had kind of figured out our strengths and weaknesses, you think? And like sort of Leslie's better totally tell me if I'm right. Leslie's better at chunking out and figuring out an initial outline and writing in kind of an initial draft. And then we discuss. And then I kind of come in and do kind of revisions and move things
make
around.
Make it clear.
Well.
And readable. And yeah. Yeah.
I think, it depends. It really, I'd like to answer for other writers, right? What's your strength? Like, you know what your strength is. I think most people know what they're, do you think? No. If you know what your strength is.
If you know what your strength is, that's really useful. Mm-hmm. I guess I didn't really understand what my strength was until I saw what you did with what I had done.
Mm. Yeah, so process of back and forth. It took us, right, we did this for 9 months, like a baby, 9 months.
We started doing that first part, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I think part of it is trial and error, and then part of it is trying to, you know, I gained a lot of self-awareness in the process of working with Shelley.
Yeah.
Because she was reflecting back to me, no, this is useful. I'm like, that's not useful. That's just a bunch of blah, 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 blah. But no. And then she turned it into something beautiful. And she swears that it, you know, that it came from that mess.
No, okay. We're not going to do this. No, right. We figured it out along the way. And I think probably every collaboration, you slowly, gradually, I don't know, probably Sean and Stephen Pressfield did the same thing, kind of back and forth, figured out how the collaboration would work best.
Yes. What we figured out is that I would get no credit for anything. No. Yeah, I mean, Steve would always come in with something that was absolutely publishable. And then as the editor, I would sort of take more of like your role, Shelley, which was sort of clarifying individual sections. And then I would also do macro editing too. But I don't think that either one of you is better at one thing than the other. Here's what I think. I think that every relationship between two people, it finds this sort of really cool place where you reach an agreement and an understanding if you both come into the relationship with earnest intention. So both of you were earnestly interested in doing this book because you were both of all the StoryGrid certified editors, you two were the only ones who said, hey, this tipping point thing, this is interesting, right? So you both came into it with the right intention, which was, mm-hmm. I want to explore the tipping point as a phenomenon, right? And so the two of you were like, hey, here's a fellow nerd. Let me nerd out with the nerd. And then as you were doing it, you hit my wife and I have certain duties that we both take on, and like I do the laundry, right? So I just do all the laundry and she makes dinner. And it doesn't mean that she couldn't do the laundry and I couldn't make dinner, but we just feel comfortable doing that in a way that it's not burdensome. So I think the two of you, when you come into a project with earnest intentions and you're open to taking on the role that which you will best contribute, that you will do it. So for example, Shelley, you might work with somebody else, and I know you have clients, and you're probably doing a lot of macro. You know, you're probably doing a lot of macro organization. In this case, Leslie brought the macro and you brought the micro. And then you batted it back and forth and you would tweak her macro, et cetera. So it's this really cool collaborative effort. And what was really made me just so happy was that the voice of the books is pure. So it doesn't feel like somebody wrote one part, somebody wrote the other part. So it's very consistent and clear. And it feels as if these two friends sat down and together they agreed upon an appropriate point of view and voice, and you delivered it. But you didn't do that like consciously.
Yeah.
So if we just called it like written by Tasha Zabusko and took both of your names off of it, people were like, I want to meet this Tasha Zabusko because she's really smart, right? But together you become Tasha Zabusko.
Okay, we're going to rethink that name, but but that's so, yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened. And there was a lot of talking too, right?
Sure.
We talked all the time. And so maybe that's why our voices melded really
well. It's great. This is great.
Okay, got a question here that was submitted ahead of time. Basically, if you look at the statistics of people's reading in North America, it's going down, especially with podcasts, audiobooks, film, Netflix, and so on. Do you worry about what this means for writers if the reading of physical books is going down?
Me?
Yeah.
Do I worry? Well, there's so many other things to worry about that, no, I don't worry about it because...
Especially right now.
Yeah, no, and it's just, I've heard those statistics since I started in publishing in 1991. So when I started, guess what was the big problem in book publishing? We were losing market share because there were these CD-ROMs that were coming on and all of these really incredible things that were... So since I started in book publishing so long ago, and from day one, the sky was falling about people's literary interests, I've become sort of, I don't listen to that anymore. And all I can think of is, let me not worry about 350 million people in the United States. Instead, why don't I think about the X number of people who would want to join a Story Grid guild and think about what they want. And then those people's enthusiasm and exploratory modal behavior will sort of get other people to be interested too. So one of the biggest lessons I ever learned in book publishing was really focus and narrow down your target market. And, you know, Tim wrote something really good about this when in his first 1,000 copies book or in some blog post, but he was sort of like worried about his big client, Ramit Sethi, who's this big best-selling writer. And he was worried that, you know, what he was writing wasn't going to be good enough for Ramit, and geez, maybe I shouldn't even post this. And he finally just said, you know what? I'm not writing for Ramit Sethi. I'm writing for my friend Jill. I'm just making up her name, and Jill needs my help. I'm a little bit ahead of her, and if I can write her a letter explaining what I mean here and direct it to Jill, then I'll be in good shape. So he actually cut a picture of Jill out and put it on his thing, and then he would always begin his blog post, Dear Jill, and write Jill a letter, and at the end, he would cut out the Dear Jill part. That's such a simple idea, but it's so powerful because what it makes you stop doing is engaging in all of this, excuse the bullshit resistance about worrying about things that you have no control over. Whether or not people are going to read your book, you can't control it. All you can do is say, who would want to read this? Let me make it the best I can for those people. And then, you know, that's it. That's all I can do. And I'm going to do my best doing that. And it's not sexy. There's no big, there's no big, easy magic fairy dust that will solve your problem. But what it will do is it will say to you, did I reach my goal of being able to communicate to my friend Jill? And Jill will tell you. So have those people. So I just finished writing something and I shared it with a couple of people who I really admire. And they said, you know, this isn't really that clear yet. So maybe you need to redo this. And so I had to say to myself, well, if the people that I'm writing this for are having a hard time understanding what I'm writing, I need to revise it. Now, that's a difficult pill to swallow when you want to just get the thing done, but that's how you measure whether or not you accomplished your goal. It's not whether you sold X number of copies within X number of days and blah, 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 blah. Because the beautiful thing about book publishing, and it's just makes my heart so warm, it's an infinite space. It's not a finite space. There's infinite opportunities for people to discover your work today. It's not a finite window. There isn't, you know, if you're number 16 million on Amazon on Tuesday, it doesn't mean that you're going to be 16 million on Wednesday. Because somebody might buy it and you might get a little traction, and never quit on your stuff. So book publishing is this great place. It's an infinite space. There's no time when you're not allowed to market it anymore. Every day is a new day for people who've never heard about your work to discover it. So when you approach it as this is not all or nothing and I'm a loser if I don't sell 125 copies on the first day of on sale, if you stop approaching it like that and say, did I deliver what I promised to my friend Jill? Is Jill, does she have a little bit more knowledge that I was able to give her by my writing this book or this podcast or this blog post or this email or this text? Does Jill have a little bit of a greater grip on the world because I've offered this little tiny sliver of knowledge? And if the answer to that is yes, you go, right on. I've done my duty. Let me try and deliver some more slivers of the tiny bits of knowledge that I have to other people. And that is it. That is all you can do. But the beauty of the time we're living in is we've got this infinite, amazing marketplace. We've got the ability to talk to each other, even when we're not allowed to leave our house sometimes. And let's make the most of it. You know, this is incredible that we can all be here right now talking about a project that was a couple of emails 15 months ago from two people who were interested in taking something that I've done and make it actually good. And they did that. And here we are talking about it. So don't worry about statistics about literacy or people don't buy books anymore because everybody's watching Netflix. Well, audiobooks are the biggest rising factor in books. I don't believe that people are looking for easy answers anymore. People want really, really thoughtful, smart people explaining to them their worldview. And as Leslie and Shelley say, bring up some questions. Like, let's look at some questions, man. There's some pretty cool phenomena out there. Why don't we explore it? Oh, I never looked at something like that before in that way. That's why we're here. And it's an amazing opportunity for all of us. And I'm so excited by the ability for people to be able to find each other in the StoryGrid universe and to be able to collaborate in ways that makes things that have been, you know, poking me for 30 years more vivid, more clear, more interesting. So humility, and don't listen to the statistics.
All right, another one for you, Sean. Do you think that story grid analysis of nonfiction is a good exercise for fiction writers, or are we better off focusing on fiction analysis?
Well, I have never failed to learn something analyzing anything. Even if you analyze, like one of the things that I do during StoryGrid certified editor training, and this is my favorite part actually, is I find my favorite songs. And I look for like the strangest songs that have just struck me as like emotionally. Like I respond to them emotionally, and when I hear them, I start to tear up. And I'm like, that's something I need to analyze, right? Because it's this salient feature that is somehow penetrating this thick skull of mine, getting through all those neurons and tapping an emotional response. So what I do is I analyze songs. And I'll say, what's the inciting incident of this song? What is the turning point? Like one of the ones I did is Papa Was a Rolling Stone. And I always was like, there's something about this song. It's just, I can't stop listening to it. It's so amazing. And then when I analyzed it and I hit that turning point, I started to cry because it was so clear that the performers and the songwriters, this was about abandonment. This was about, oh my God. And it had that heartbeat beat line that it was right to the core. So analyzing nonfiction, sure, it's going to help your fiction. Analyzing a song, sure. And one of our editors, Melanie Naumann in Germany, was so struck by the song analysis, that's her niche now. So she works with songwriters in Germany, and she goes through these masterworks and analyzes each of their songs and then helps songwriters make sure they're hitting the five commandments. And it's her niche. And she sent me the stuff that she's working on, and I was like, oh my God, this is genius. She's analyzed all these major albums from all time. So my point is, anything you analyze in terms of the five commandments is gonna be extraordinarily helpful to you in your fiction writing. Even analyzing a disagreement that you had with the guy at the Piggly Wiggly, or your spouse or your kid or whatever. And you go, huh, the turning point is I blew up and yelled. Huh, I wonder what that's about. And then it turned the value shift from, hey, this is, aren't we a happy family, into everyone stays away from dad. Oh, that's not good. So how do I reframe that scene the next time that this occurs, so that I don't have to deal with nobody wants to be around dad for 27 hours, because that's not fun. I've been there so many times. Like, there's a reason why I have my own building to do things like this. It's like, don't get near dad when he's analyzing stuff. So the answer to the question is analyze everything. Because it'll make you start to change your behavior in ways that'll be extraordinarily helpful. And it's not just good for your fiction writing, it's good for life.
Can I add one little thing to that? Was that what I noticed is that it was like when I learned French in school, I understood English differently because I was looking at the same components in a different system, and that happens with nonfiction, fiction, songs, whatever you happen to be using. So
yeah, and you should definitely, while you're watching movies with your family, analyze them out loud. They love that.
Definitely.
Pause. Make sure to pause too.
Yeah, that's
go back.
Go back. Yeah.
So this is a question from Vane for Shelley and Leslie. My family and I are scientists, and as my dad is retiring, he wants to write a big idea book on all that he has learned through his career about how beaches work. We are having problems getting away from making it purely academic, as we want the knowledge to go out to anyone. What tools would you recommend to make that leap from academic writing to big idea writing?
There's been a lot of responses to that in the chat, which have been really lovely. And I think it is, for Big Idea, you're focusing on a question about a problem or a phenomenon, and you're telling a story, the story of how you figured something out, how you came to an insight, which I think is different from what happens a lot of times in how-to. It's like you've had the insight and you just you're mainly transferring that insight to the reader. Mm-hmm. But in Big Idea Nonfiction, you're really telling the story, just like the tipping point is a biography of an idea, right? It's the story of how I figured something out, and you take the reader with you on that. Oh, that is the cutest pug ever. it's the story of that, as opposed to just here's the information and just the process, but the story.
And which is why it's a big deal, or was a big deal for me, and I think both of us, when we just sort of got in our heads, author protagonist, because when you think of yourself as the protagonist, it is you're writing a story. You know you're writing a story, right? And you like frame it that way. Whereas academics are used to writing in a different way, sort of with that total focus on solving a problem and not necessarily telling the story of how they solve the problem.
Okay. So Sean, this one's for you. I'm interested in what you have to say on it. This is about agents reviewing manuscripts. So if you're trying to get an agent, it seems like they just look at the first few pages. They just look at the sentence level craft. What's your opinion on if you want to try to get an agent for your novel, like what's the best way to get an agent's attention and to actually give your book a try?
Well, it's funny because, I'm preparing for, doing the Hero's Journey seminar in July. And I've been watching, years ago, I started watching Brandon Sanderson's, I highly recommend just going to YouTube, and you can download and watch his course that he gives on writing fantasy at BYU. Anyway, so he perfectly answered this question when somebody asked it. So I'm just going to steal his answer. And he said, okay, imagine that you're in a lecture hall and two people walk out and there's a grand piano. And there's the first person sits down and they've been really working hard for like a year, like really hard every day for 3 hours a day, learning a particular piece of music. And so they sit down and they play the piece of music. And then the next person who comes on has been doing it for 25 years. And they are a concert pianist at a level that is extraordinary. So they sit down and play. And the question that Sanderson poses is, would you be able to tell the difference? And I think we all know the answer to that. And it's, of course we would. Because the master, pianist, they're operating at a level that is difficult to specifically say how amazing it is, but we can really tell. It's like that intuitive, that intuition, implicit learning capability that all Homo sapiens have. Okay, so what does this have to do with agents? Okay, so agents, imagine they're looking at 100 queries probably every 3 days. So maybe they're getting 200 a week. And say they've been doing it for 5 years. We have some editors who are agents and they've been doing it for a few years and they can tell like that. Okay, so what's a person to do facing this conundrum? Well, you've got to work on your scenes. I'm not saying that it's hopeless if you've only been working for a year, but what I am saying is that if you've been working for a year on trying to weave a tapestry of 65 scenes into a glorious novel, that it's going to take you a little bit longer than a year to be able to do that. Now, Tim and I worked for 4.5 years from basically zero to publishable work, and it was a long, hard battle. And I think if I had to do it all over again, we would have started on scenes. And being able to craft brilliant, fun scenes that aren't necessarily perfectly attuned to the language, the agent will always take a client who can write a really great scene, even if the line-by-line writing is not Philip Roth quality, or Toni Morrison quality, or who have you. So the key to getting agents to want to read your work is literally start on that first scene. If you don't think this is the best scene you've ever written on page one, you got to do it until you do. And then your second scene should be at that level, or maybe a little, like, think of it in terms of giving someone a bite of food. If the food isn't so great on that first taste, it's going to be hard to get them to chew another bite. So make that first scene delicious, and then they can start to attune themselves to your voice. And if you have a really great inciting incident as your global hook, then you can build from there. So obviously, a friend of mine named Noah Lukman wrote a book called The First 5 Pages. He's an agent. I've known him for 25 years. And he wrote that book 20 years ago. And it's still doing extraordinarily well because he laid it out immediately. Like, you got to nail those first 5 pages on a query. So concentrate on your scenes. Thankfully, we're going to be doing scene work for the foreseeable future from week to week. It's a great opportunity for everyone to just, you know, take all the stress away and just run with the prompts and have fun. So we'll work on scenes, and from scenes, do sequences arise, do acts arise, etc. So I think in story grid terms, people want everything, right? So that's what I gave them in the story grid book. I gave them everything. And then we're even adding different layers on top of that now. But if someone were to say, what's the bottom line, Sean? What's like the must have? Okay, you got to have the 5 commandments. You got to be able to write a scene. And you got to understand what a fear is, a P-H-E-R-E, which is an unexpected event that arises that gives the energy necessary to create the scene. So the better your fears are in each of the scenes, the more compelling they will be.
Awesome. Okay, we're coming up to the hour here. I've got just a couple more questions. One is about scene resolution and cliffhangers. I think we've talked about this a little bit before, but how do you view this as far as like with the way I understand cliffhangers, especially is like you're basically still doing the 5 parts of a scene, but you're saving the resolution until the beginning of the next scene in that particular storyline in the book. But are there any like downsides to doing something like that, like not resolving the scene right there all at the same time?
Yeah, you can't do it too many times or people recognize it as a you know, a crutch. So yeah, you can do it. Oftentimes I think it's good to end on a crisis. That's what the old Batman television series would do. So you end on the crisis. Do I do this or do I do that? And then what's also good is the next chapter, you lead with a subplot. So you don't go back to answer that thing. And then you can generate a little bit of editorial magic, which is narrative drive, by getting the person to read the next bit by cliffhanging. But again, when you rely upon this too much, then it becomes like, oh, this writer's just completely manipulating me. So as a rule of thumb, I would say, if you can do it one time, cool. And save it for a really good moment, like maybe a big climactic moment in your middle build or right before the ending payoff. Like that, it's what they did in The Silence of the Lambs, is that he cut from Clarice Starling knocking on the door of Buffalo Bill to the FBI. So the FBI breaking down another door that wasn't Buffalo Bill, and then woof, then the story went way high because all we needed to keep reading to find out what the hell was going on. So one time is cool, two maybe, but I wouldn't make a habit of it.
All right. Final question, and this is just kind of a technical question about our publishing house. If an author has previously self-published a novel, but they've rewritten it based on everything they've learned on StoryGrid, can they still submit it for StoryGrid publishing?
You can. My feeling about it, though, is that when we become too enamored with our previous work and we keep revising it, it's a sign of resistance. And also look at it from the publisher's point of view. Hey, new and improved book that didn't sell the first time. It's not exactly like a great platform to release a novel is to say, this is a novel that was previously published, but now it has been rejiggered and reworked. It just seems like, you know, if you were the buyer, say you were in a bookstore and, you know, you read this, because you would have to put a disclaimer in the book as a ethical publisher saying previously published as, in fact, that's legally required. So if you're looking at it and it says previously published as this book, then you're like, what's going on here? Let me find another one. So my advice is let it go. Say, I love you, book that was my first novel that didn't live up to my expectations. I've learned a lot analyzing it. I've learned a lot revising it. Let me take what I've learned and create something new and fresh and have fun exploring something new. That would be my advice.
All right, so let's end there. So as we mentioned, we're gonna be doing some new stuff with the coronavirus pandemic, of doing the daily writing sprints. We're gonna be starting them on Monday, and we're gonna have the weekly assignments from Sean, the scene assignments and the Q&A. We're currently planning on doing those from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time. But you know, that's where we're going to start, and we're going to continue just to experiment with it as we go. You know, our goal with the guild from the beginning is to give you a writing community where you can all kind of work together and learn together and level up your craft together. And so that's what we're going to keep trying to do. So yeah, we're planning on doing it Monday through Friday. I don't think we're planning on doing it on the weekend. So we're going to focus on Monday through Friday, and we're going to communicate all of this in the next probably 24 hours. You'll get some more communication in the community and via email. So yeah, we're really excited about that. Thanks so much to Leslie and Shelley for coming on and sharing, and congratulations again on your two books. It's been really fun for me on this side to just see, like, oh my gosh, we're publishing books that it's not just me and Sean doing this stuff, you know? So that's exciting. And yeah, so if you have any other questions, you can follow up with us. Thanks for being here live with us. Thanks for listening to the recording. And we will keep trucking together and keep leveling up our craft while we have all this spare time on our hands. So we will talk soon and see you soon. Thank you.